Accession number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, Reel 18.
Mr. Clark, Reel 18. You were there from the November to February 1942. Do you recall the journey back?
Well, we must have left there somewhere about... maybe around about the 9th or 10th of February. I'm not so sure. But we would leave there somewhere about then.
Just before we go on there... Did you know you were moving, or was it a surprise?
No, we knew we were coming back.
And did you know where you were coming back to? Had they told you where you were going to?
No. The rumour was we were going to Damascus in Syria. That was the rumour. But we didn't get there, of course.
Pleased when you heard the announcement you were moving?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. To get out of that...
You'd had enough.
You'd had enough of that.
Right, so you set off to come back on the journey.
Well, I used to keep a record of when I got my letters and that from home, and in a little book, and every now and again I used to write in it little bits of things that was happening. And I remember on the 12th of February. So we might have been travelling 2 or 3 days then. But I can't remember what happened. That was at the start. But on the 12th of February, we travelled in my truck 138 miles. And we broke down for petrol trouble. And we were left for 2 hours. And then on the next day, we travelled 104 miles. And we broke down 4 times.
Same problem?
Yes, and a strong wind blowing. I've written in the strong wind. And then on the third day of our travel, where I can record, the 14th of February, we travelled about another 130 odd miles and we arrived at H4, which was a pumping station. There was 4 of them. There was H1, 2, 3 and 4, which were pumping stations. And I suppose the convoy would pick up water and that day, I suppose. And on the next day, the 15th of February, I'd written, we left H4 and we came to a place, and I think they called it Mafraq. And we travelled 125 miles. And we camped, I've written down, we camped on green grass for the first time. And then on the 16th of February, we travelled to Palestine. But there had been a rumour that we were going to Damascus, but that was not on us. Something must have turned up. And on the 16th, we travelled to Palestine, which was Palestine then, not Israel. And I've written down, slept in the truck. And on the 17th, the next day, we left that camp at 5 a.m. and went on a train.
Can we just stop at that point for the moment and look back on the journey itself? Obviously, each day you pitched your tents as you did on the way up. Did you have, again, to be very careful about the stealing of rifles and this kind of thing?
Oh, yes.
And you were lying with your rifles attached to your person.
Somewhere, yes. You see, what was happening in these 5 days that I've noted, even while I was travelling with HQ, the other companies, I believe, were doing an exercise on the way out with the transport and that movement of troops. So I believe that's what was happening.
When you broke down, did you just have to wait there until one of the
yes.
fitters or someone arrived to help
Well, we did know there was an LAD travelling up behind us, light year detachment. And I remember when the driver, this Jack Holt, who was he was a good lad, when we broke down with his petrol trouble the first time, after he got a look under the bonnet, there was petrol leaking from the petrol lead. It was like about a quarter of an inch diameter pipe, petrol pipe, I'll call it. And we waited. Anyway, the LAD came up, and strangely enough, I never forgot what he did, even to this day. He had a look and he said, "Oh, we'll soon fix that." And he took a little hacksaw blade or a hacksaw, and he sawed the hole out of the pipe. And we wondered what he's going to do. Maybe he's about a couple of inches out. And he took from his pocket a piece of rubber tubing. And he fastened that rubber tubing over both ends that had been cut away. So we had the pipe, then the tube, then the pipe. And it sealed that pipe up, and he said, "That'll get you to where we're going, and then it'll have to be fixed." And I never forgot that.
You're travelling quite considerable miles each day. It mm-hmm. must have, again, been very exhausting and tiring.
Travelled a long time, yeah. Yeah.
So you got to Palestine, and then you were put on train. I think that was the last entry you gave me.
Yes, we went on a... We were put on a train. I can't remember the name.
Did that take you up to the canal?
Yes, yes. I was trying to think of the name of the... Because when we got there, we had to cross the canal, and a lot of the blankets and stuff had to be carried across. And some of the Egyptians was, well, they, I don't know how they come, but they were carrying some of them across. You know, we had to carry them down so far, and they were engaged by somebody, I don't know. But I suppose they nicked a few and all. I could only remember the name of that place over there. Anyway, on the 18th I've got on, we are in Egypt now. I can't name the place. Of course, we had to be very careful. We weren't allowed to, even in your letters, they were censored and everything, you know. You had to be very careful what you put in. I mean, once you've left a place, well, that's all right. You're not there then.
Had you at this point been told where you were heading?
No.
Just knew you were going there.
We knew we were going somewhere.
Had the thought occurred to you at this point that you may have been going into an action situation?
Mm-hmm.
And had you any feelings about that?
No. We're just quite happy we were on the move. And I wrote down on this train wherever it was going to. You don't know. And I wrote down we were in the Western Desert, and it was raining, and we slept in the open. That's the words I wrote on this. And we were still there, and on the next day, 20th, there was dust storms, and we were sleeping in a bivouac.
So had a pretty rough entry to the desert. Rain one day and dust storms the next.
Mm-hmm.
Was the desert a surprise to you, to what you expected?
Well, it was a wilderness. Wilderness. You see, when we got there, the Italian army and the British army had been up and down the desert maybe twice before we got there.
Did you see signs of that activity?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Presumably they were broken down vehicles or what have you, or at least damaged.
Well, you saw some of them. But that was on... I always remembered the 19th because of my father's birthday. That's why I've written in the Western Desert. Didn't say where. I didn't know where. Raining, slept in the open. And then on the 20th was my mother's birthday. They followed each other. And I've written down dust storms, sleeping in a bivouac.
What's it like experiencing a dust storm? Because you would experience others as
well. Oh dear. Can't see your hand in front of you. Of course, some of us used to use these anti-gas goggles to put over your eyes, you know, to keep the sand out of your eyes. You used to stick around with the sweat on you, of course, as well.
Did the sand get everywhere?
Why, yes. Why, yes. Oh, it was a bit hard then, at that area. But as I say, we were all moving, you see.
So you're moving up the desert at this point in time. Trucks or rail, or what was your transport?
We only went with the train. I believe there was... I think the Egyptians only took them so far. It might have been to Mersa Matruh. And then after that, I'm nearly sure... There were some army lads, I think they were New Zealanders. They took over, taking the train up to... Because once we got out the train, we were putting cattle trucks. And they went up to Kaputso, I think it was. I think that's where it went to, Kaputso. El Kaputso. And, of course, it was difficult, I can remember... Travelling in the cattle trucks, sanitation, nil. But they used to stop the train, and you were allowed so long to get out and into the desert with a little entrenching tool. And of course, when you maybe it's allowed about 15 minutes, you've maybe stopped for about 15 minutes. And then you give a couple of blasts on the hooter and you had to make a dash back. Some with the trousers on, some with them off. But that I'm nearly sure there were New Zealanders that were driving this train. And we got to Port Kaputso. I think that was the place, but after the 20th, I've got nothing. We must have still been travelling somewhere. And on the 25th, we came to a place called, I think it was Akroma, after we left Port Kaputso. I think it was a place called Akroma. And there, at one of the when we were stopped, we were in transport then, surely. Yeah. There was a German cemetery had been built somewhere there, and I can remember, not far from there, there was about 12 or 13 graves. German soldiers' graves at Akroma. Some of them were just young lads, I can remember. I remember distinctly one grave age, the lad was 18. They weren't very old.
Bit of a sobering experience, was it for
you? It was. But it wasn't so bad for me. Because having been in France and Dunkirk, I'd seen some. But it doesn't affect you, really. Or at least it didn't affect me then. But some of the lads that hadn't seen action, you see, there'd be those lads that come out from England that hadn't seen any action. Even when we were in Cyprus or that, you see. And then 5 days later, I've written in this, from the 20th to the 25th of February now, I've written near El Adam, which was an RAF station. They used to use that there. And then the following day, 26th of February, I've written down air battle, plane showdown, dust storms. So that must have been somewhere near El Adam. I can remember there was a Stuka dive bomber had been shot down there before we got there. It was just outside of El Adam in the desert, nose down. And that's all I've got for February, but in the 1st of March, all I've written down is windy.
Well, you're in the box by now, the Gazala box.
No, not yet.
Do you remember when you got to the box, when you reached it?
Yeah. On the 4th of... The 1st of March was windy. The 4th of March was raining. The 5th of March, we were in the area now in Gazala. 5th of March. We might have been somewhere between the 1st and the 4th. I'm not so sure. But how I know we were there, on the 5th of March, I've got written down raining, digging an RAP. Which was a regimental aid post.
Do you recall your arrival at the box? You would take over from some other unit, did you?
I believe we took over from the Indians. It could have been the 10th Indian Division. I think that's who we took over from. They'd been up the desert a while.
And your first task in your case was to dig this RAP?
Yes, all the companies was designated out, I suppose, but I was still in HQ.
Can you recall the size and measurements of your RAP?
It had to be a place where it didn't have to be too big, and you had to be able to move at a moment's notice.
And with it, exactly what were you digging? It would be dug in such a way as to have...
Just like a square, and that we might as well get a wounded man in or a couple of stretchers, something like that, you know. We covered it with a tarpaulin. We covered this with a tarpaulin. And then, of course, we had to camouflage it from the air.
How did
with
you do
sand
that?
And anything you could find, you know. And you weren't allowed to leave the entrance to it open. That had to be camouflaged because, strangely enough, in the desert, if you dug a hole or something and then you left a, it was dug down, then you left a, let's say, a doorway type of thing in it, surprise, now it shows up as a black object. It showed up. Mm-hmm. So we were told we had to cover that up, camouflage it. And the MO, and the MO was not far away. Well, of course, we had to dig him a dugout and all.
How deep would your RAP be?
About 6 foot. When we did get it finished, to put bits of things in, we dug little crevices into the wall of the dugout.
And then, as you say, your MO had his own little dugout. Did you then have your own dugouts, your own sleep trenches?
We used to sleep in there. Three of us. We used to sleep in there.
Did you have a bed for any
no.
sick or wounded man?
Or just use stretchers. Maybe use a stretcher and lift it off the bottom, build it off the bottom, using into the sand, you know, dug into the wall type of thing, or any boxes you might have.
Where?
You see, we didn't keep them there. As soon as they were dealt with, any wounded man, they were sent straight on to the field ambulance. That wasn't our job.
Where would the RAP be in relation to the front line companies and platoons? Close or far away?
They were a good way off.
A good distance?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what that distance might be?
Do you mean the companies?
Yeah, well, basically I'm talking about the wire at the front of the box.
Oh,
to
yes,
where you were.
The wire was a good way off. But your companies were inside that box.
The companies inside the box, yes.
That's why I got the name the Gazala box. And within that box, there was openings. And they were named after places in Durham. In fact, there was the Durham Gap, Auckland Gap. I suppose that would represent the 6th Battalion. There was Stanley Gap. That would represent the 8th Battalion. And we were the Durham Gap. I cannot remember. There might have been more. But all, if I was told to go through the Durham Gap, go out, I knew I was going out the back end of the... That was the only map reference I had. I knew where I was going, to Durham Gap. But if they said Auckland Gap, I would have to go somewhere in another direction. But you got used to that.
So you had a gap driving into the box, and then you'd have gaps on the far enemy side, you might say, to get you out.
Yeah, yes.
The box, what was it wired and mined in?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, there was mines put around, but if the truth was known, there might have been some dummy mines put around minefields as well, you know. So if the enemy come up, they wouldn't know whether they were mines or not. But the openings were, there was always a guard on them. And their object was, if there was a breakthrough or anything, they had mines there, they could drop them in, pull the wire across, and the gap was sealed. Your wire fence, as you call it, is sealed. But there was mines in there.
How wide would the gap be?
Or maybe it's a couple of... You maybe get a couple of trucks going through, passing each other, if you had to.
So you dug your RAP and your own officer's sleeping quarters. What was life like living in the box?
Oh. You were glad to keep moving about. But you see, you weren't allowed to move about that much. The enemy wasn't very far away.
I think, wasn't he a good distance away in the beginning, but moved closer?
Oh, he moved
closer,
and he came up to a place called Tamimi.
Before we come to talk about that element
but,
of it...
That was a while off.
What was the water situation?
The water truck used to come around. He used to call the lad that was driving that, I forget his name at present. He'd been in France with us, I think. But that was his job, to go around the companies.
And you'd be rationed, were you?
Well, I'll tell you what they used to do. Most of the water was taken to the cookhouse. And he would have enough water to make sure we had enough to cook for your meals. And any surplus was shared out to the lads. See, if they tried to... You wouldn't have time, or you wouldn't have the facilities to share water out in a water bottle. So I think all the water mostly went to the cookhouse. So if you had 120 men, you had rations for 120 men. He had it. And he had, of course, he had to be fed. So he, the cook sergeant, called him Joe Childs. I think he'd come from the King Shropshire Light Infantry as well. It was his... It was his job to see that water was any surplus, and then we used to go across and get what was left, maybe half a bottle or a bottle. I don't know, I think we're only allowed about 2 pints a day. Wasn't much.
And that would be for everything, was it? Washing, drinking?
Yes, yes.
How did you organise your that washing, drinking situation? I'm thinking in terms of the, having the small amount of water.
Well,
you'd have to ration it yourselves, in effect.
We did ration ourselves. In fact, some of the lads that after got the mess tin full of tea, you know, used to leave a drop in the bottom and get shaved. That type of thing. Used to shave with tea. Just enough to wet you, yes.
It was completely dirty and smelly over time.
Yes, yes.
Were the baths handy? Did the mobile baths come up occasionally for you?
You know, I can't even remember.
You didn't get a chance of being taken back to the sea to splash around?
Not like we had been in Palestine. Not like that.
In Cyprus?
Cyprus and Palestine. No, you see, if my memory serves me right, from the sea coming into the desert was the 1st South African Division. Then I believe, I'm only speaking off memory now, then I believe it was the 50 Div. Then after that, getting deeper into the desert now, would be the Brigade of Guards. And right down on the flank was the Free French. I believe that's the way it was. But we didn't see any of the South Africans like that.
Can we continue talking about life in the box? You say that you had tea. How did you get your fires for brewing tea?
Well, we didn't. If we had water, you could use an part of a petrol tin that had been cut down, put sand in it, and a little drop of petrol. And it's amazing how it used to burn, but you had to be very careful, because you might think that was out, and you stir it up and it'll bust into flame again. So if you ever did that, that sand had to be emptied out. Tin had to be turned over and emptied out.
But tea was an important drink to the British soldier.
Oh, yes. Not as much as the Indians. They got a bigger ration than the British lads. They were tea men.
Food in the desert, what was coming up to you? In the box, I should say.
Well, it really was just about the same. You know, because you couldn't amalgamate in big groups in the desert, you know. Maybe so many at a time would go and get and then come back to your dugout. That type of thing. There was a lot of hardtack.
Tinned food, very largely.
The only time we got tinned fruit was when they called it the Red Shield, came up into the area. But you got told they were coming up.
Who were the Red Shield?
Like the Salvation Army. They used to come up and bring rations up and that, because you had to buy them. When they were coming up, the officers used to, we had a pay parade, and they used to tell us, spend your money, because if everybody kept that money in their pocket, there'd be none for the next set of lads to spend, you see. Same as on a ship. So we used to go across and buy tins of fruit, anything that was going. But I'll call it the Salvation Army, they had RASC trucks coming up with them to carry the rations. They had their, what would you call it, the hut or whatever they call it, you know, the biggest thing. You used to put the lid up and they used to serve like a counter. But the rations, was carried by RASC, I would think, unless they were their trucks. But they used to come up, mind, they did come up into the area, those people. It's one thing I will say about them, they were very good.